tape. He and Nob is Dad, and for the rest of the family, Grandad.
Hello there, this is your Grandad speaking. Now pin back your lug holes and listen to me. I'm going to tell you the story of my young years to the end of 1914-19 war, as far as I can remember. But not all of my life. I haven't the stamina for that. I was born on the 17th of November 1898. So I'm told. I can't remember myself. My mother's name was Sophia. My father's name was Walter. My father died in 1904, so I don't remember much about him. My mother was a very, very sweet person, and very much like my daughter Mary, whom you will know. My mother had a delicatessen shop and did very well with it until about 1910. That was the year that the Channel was flown from France to England, but for the first time. I remember that it caused a big sensation at the time. My mother was taken ill with cancer and died at my grandfather's farm in Suffolk. Well, there was us, our children, living, left my sisters Blanche and Grace. For my brother Dolph and me. Dolph died of tuberculosis in 1921. Grace died in 1928 in Birmingham. Blanche is going strong in Yorkshire and she's now about 90 years old. When I was on my grandfather's farm, I left school and worked on the farm. I was 12 or 14, 13 years old then, plowing the fields, milking the cows, leading an ordinary farm life. Then in 1914 I joined the army. I was then not quite 16. I joined the army in Ipswich, the 6th Suffolk Cyclist Battalion. We were sent to the coast of Suffolk to watch for enemy raiders and submarines, but we saw none. Then in 1916, I was sent to the 25th London Cyclist Battalion and remained in it for the rest of the war. I was sent to this battalion because I was a dab hand at shooting. While the Cockneys hardly knew which end the bullets came from, I had to show them how to do it. The reason I was good at shooting was that on the farm, part of my job was to keep down the vermin on the farm. These being such things as foxes, which killed the hens, and rooks, crows, and jays, which stole the hens' eggs. After joining the 25th London, we were sent to some place in Scotland for training. I remember the name of the place. I can't remember the name of the place, but we could see the 4th Bridge from it. After about 2 months, we were on our way overseas, leaving our bikes behind. We became part of the later famous 29th Division. Well, there we were aboard this ship, not knowing where we were going. I remember that it was at SS Devonshire. Eventually we woke up one morning to find the ship in the very middle of nowhere. Around appeared to be the whole of the British Navy. Battleships, cruisers, warships of all sizes, and dozens of transports without end, but no land in sight. We stuck there for about 10 days, then sailed off. Indeed, a mighty sight. Soon we saw very high cliffs on the horizon. Next day we loaded into small boats, about 50 in each boat, We all thought it was quite a nice change until we got about 250 yards from the shore when all hell broke out. Sitting ducks we were of the enemy, squatting on the top of the cliffs, but we could see no one. Of the 50 of us in the boat that I was in, only 8 got out. Those, we got up the beach, and the others were either badly wounded or dead. There was no retreat. The boats were no longer boats, but would have made good sieves. Once we got to the bottom of the cliffs, we were quite safe. That was my cat baptism of fire. The cliffs shielded us from the rifle fire, and Mills bombs were not yet invented. There we were under the cliffs 2 days later. Cliffs. 2 days later, we were ordered to down to the sea edge and dig ourselves in. This we did in the night. The next morning at daybreak, wow, the Navy had arrived. 6-8-inch guns hammering the cliff to make a way up for us. And a day or two later, we went up and dug in quite comfortably. We had the Anzacs on our right and the Scots on our left. About 20,000 men. I should say that the point at this point that the 25th Sergeant was really a headquarters duty guard squad, carrying messages to the various commands in the field. This was long before the days of field telegrams, telephones and wireless. And the messengers were very vital to part of the army, and a very dangerous one it was at times. I remember that I once found myself in the middle of a bayonet charge. The nearest man to me was about 15 yards away on my left, and he stumbled and fell, and a Turk soldier came up to him and lifted him to his feet. I don't know what happened after that, but this is one of the very nicest of my memories of the time on Gallipoli. However, a day or two later, I got a piece of shrapnel under my kneecap. Very painful it was, too. I was sent to Egypt, egg white, they called it, for training. All this was the only event in my... only one event in my 1914 war. After my wound healed, I was sent and was fit enough to join my unit again. By the way, the 25th London had been withdrawn from Gallipoli and was stationed in Suez, on the Suez Canal. I forget the name of the place. At any rate, I'd only been back about a fortnight when we were off again, this time up through the sea, Red Sea, which isn't red, through the Gulf of Oman, where I began the worst period of my life. We went ashore and started marching up along the bank of the river Euphrates. We didn't know where we were going or why. The heat was 110, 120 each day and down to near zero at night. It was absolute torment. The mosquitoes, ants, beetles, bugs by the million. And the sun, the terrible sun. Many, 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 many died of all sorts of complaints. It was absolute hell. Sunstroke, malaria, dysentery, it was really awful. I shudder even now to think of it. When we got to where we were supposed to go, there was nothing there except the everlasting desert and insects, the terrible heat. And when we got there, there was nothing at all. We had to march back again, so let's forget about this terrible trip. The next move was to German East Africa, and then bad enough, but like heaven to what we had just done. At this time there was no railway from the coast up to Nairobi, so we had to march it. But it was glorious compared with what we had just done. I must tell you about an incident that occurred on this march. One night we were woken up by the roaring of lions in or near the camp. It was a lovely bright full moon, almost as light as day. We, strangers to this sort of thing, were frightened by them, and we could see them moving about and were going for rifles when an old black man came up with an empty bucket and a stick and ran after them. With the stick, beating the bucket with the stick, and the lions ran for their lives, which all goes to show that it's nice to know what to do in an emergency. And the other incident, which was with a snake, and it was a big one, 6 or 7 feet long. It went into the tents. It went into one of the tents. You can imagine the fright of the occupants. But this time, the same darky picked it up, swung it round his neck, and walked off. Now that's what I call creating confidence. And how? I heard that after, the darky lived on that snake for a week. They are supposed to be very good to eat. I don't think I could fancy them, do you? Well, it was the same old story again. When we got there, it was all over. But it was very nice in the bush, and we were there about 2 or 3 months. Went off again, and I travelled again to India. Landed at Bombay, then up the hills to the Deccan, which is an enormous plateau, about 5,000 feet above sea level. A really glorious place to go, called Bangalore. It was heavenly to us dried up lads who had seen too much of the sun and no loving kindness for years. However, we made the most of our stay there. All too soon we were off again, this time to Baluchistan. I suspect you've never heard of it. Well, it's a very big, stony, bare desert land about half the size of Australia. I don't know why we were sent there unless we wished to show the flag. Anyway, those are the sort of things wars are like, with no one shooting at you. But they show how big India is. It took us 10 or 12 days by train, night and day travelling, to get to the borders of Baluchistan from the middle of India. While we were in Baluchistan, we had to march everywhere along dry riverbeds. There's no railway, no roads, only donkey tracks. Remember, this was 60 years ago. Now I'm coming to the end of my war saga. When we got back to India, we went into barracks in a place called Jalandhar, which is in the Punjab, where we stayed till the end of the war, having a fairly peaceful life, except for minor skirmishes in places like Khyber Pass, Afghanistan, and so on, which made a bit of an outing for us. Oh, I won the All India Cup for shooting, 100, 200, 300, 500, and 1,000 yards. But the cup was stolen from me while I was in Amritsar. At Amritsar, there were some riots going on there. I think that Indians are the worst thieves in the world. Well, you can see I've been about it quite a bit, and I bet it would be a surprise to my own girls, because I've never talked about it before, except her mum. She knew all I could remember, but was not impressed, neither was I. India is a very strange place, and most peculiar things happen there, but I hope I can tell you more about them when I'm with you. One disappointment was, when we came back in 1919, we passed through the channel at night and never saw the rock. Twice we'd been through it and had never seen it. It was Gibraltar I was talking about. I would love to see that, but I've never seen it. Well, I've been by it, past it twice. I'm coming to the end of my little bit now. I hope to tell you more when I get out there, if I can manage it. I'd like you to think that I haven't forgotten you. There's one little thing I should like you to listen to. It's a piece that Mary will know. It's called A Floral Garden.